29. All the same, the temptation to seal oneself off was a sufficiently important aspect of the period for me to devote some space to it. It has its part to play in the psychopathological process that has unfolded in the cases of millions of Germans since 1933. After all, to a normal onlooker, most Germans today exhibit the symptoms of lunacy, or at the very least, severe hysteria. If you want to understand how this came about, you have to take the trouble to place yourself in the peculiar position in which non-Nazi Germans, and that was still the majority, found themselves in 1933, and try to understand the bizarre, perverse conflicts they faced. The plight of non-Nazi Germans in the summer of 1933 was certainly one of the most difficult a person can find himself in, a condition in which one is hopelessly, utterly overwhelmed, accompanied by the shock of having been caught completely off balance. We were in the Nazis' hands, for good or ill. All lines of defence had fallen. Any collective resistance had become impossible. Individual resistance was only a form of suicide. We were pursued into the farthest corners of our private lives. In all areas of life there was rout, panic, and flight. No one could tell where it would end. At the same time, we were called upon not to surrender, but to renege. Just a little pact with the devil, and you were no longer one of the captured quarry. Instead, you were one of the victorious hunters. That was the simplest and crudest temptation. Many succumbed to it. Later, they often found that the price to be paid was higher than they had thought, and that they were no match for the real Nazis. There are many thousands of them today in Germany, Nazis with a bad conscience, people who wear their Nazi badges like Macbeth wore his royal robes, who, in for a penny, in for a pound, now find their consciences shouldering one burden after another, who search in vain for a way out, drink and take sleeping pills, no longer dare to think, and do not know whether they should rather pray for the end of the Nazi era, their own era, or dread it. When that end comes, they will certainly not admit to having been the culprits. In the meantime, however, they are the nightmare of the world. It is impossible to assess what these people might still be capable of in their moral and psychological derangement. Their history has yet to be written. Our predicament in 1933 held many other temptations apart from this, the crudest. Each was a source of madness and mental sickness for those who yielded. The devil has many nets, crude ones for crude souls, finer ones for finer souls. If you refused to become a Nazi, you found yourself in a fiendish situation. It was one of complete and unalleviated hopelessness. You were daily subjected to insults and humiliations, forced to watch unendurable scenes, had nowhere to run to mitigate your anguish. Such a situation carries its own temptations, apparent remedies that hide the barb of the devil. One temptation, often favoured by older people, was withdrawal into an illusion, preferably the illusion of superiority. Those that surrendered to this clung to the amateurish, dilettantish aspects that Nazi politics undoubtedly exhibited at first. Every day they tried to convince themselves and others that this could not continue for long, and maintained an attitude of amused criticism. They spared themselves the perception of the fiendishness of Nazism by concentrating on its childishness, and misrepresented their position of complete powerless subjugation as that of superior, unconcerned onlookers. They found it both comforting and reassuring to be able to quote a new joke or a new article about the Nazis from the London Times. They were people who predicted the imminent end of the regime, at first with calm certainty, later, as the months went by, with ever more desperate self-deception. The worst came for them when the Nazi Party visibly consolidated itself and had its first successes. They had no weapons to cope with these. In the years that followed, this group was the target of a psychologically clever bombardment with boastful statistics. They formed the majority of the late converts to Nazism in the years from 1935 to 1938. Once their strenuously maintained pose of superiority had been rendered untenable, great numbers of these people yielded. Once the successes they had always declared to be impossible became reality, they conceded defeat. But he has achieved what no one else achieved. Yes, that's just the trouble. Oh, you just love paradoxes, don't you? A Conversation from 1938. A few of them still hold the banner high. Even after all their defeats, they still prophesy the inevitable collapse of the regime every month, or at least once a year. Their stand has a certain magnificence, you have to admit, but also a certain eccentricity. The funny thing is that one day, after they have stood fast through all their cruel disappointments, they will be proved right. I can already see them strutting around after the defeat of the Nazis and telling everybody that they had predicted it all along. By then, however, they will have become tragicomic figures. There is a way of being right that is shameful and lends its opponent undeserved glory. Think of Louis XVIII. The second danger was embitterment, masochistically surrendering oneself to hate, suffering, and unrelieved pessimism. This is perhaps the most natural reaction to defeat for the Germans. In their darkest hours, in private or in public life, every German has to fight against this temptation, to give up completely once and for all, to let the world go to the devil with a wan indifference bordering on compliance, to commit sullen, angry suicide. I begin to be weary of the sun, and wish the estate of the world were now undone. Macbeth, Act 5, Scene 5. It looks very heroic. All consolation is utterly rejected, but the sufferer fails to see that this is itself the most poisonous, dangerous, vicious form of consolation. The perverse indulgence in self-sacrifice, a Wagnerian lust for death and destruction, that is the most complete consolation for a defeated man who cannot find the strength and courage to face defeat and bear it. I make bold to prophesy that this will be the basic stance of Germany after it has lost the Nazi war, the wild, headstrong wailing of a child taking the loss of its doll for the end of the world. There was already a lot of this in the German reaction to the defeat of 1918. In 1933, little of the inner feelings of the defeated majority was reflected in public attitudes because officially no one had been defeated. Officially there was only celebration, things getting better, liberation, deliverance, salvation, intoxicating unity. Suffering had to be kept quiet. Yet embitterment was a typical reaction of the defeated after 1933. I encountered it so often myself that I am convinced the number of those affected in this way must run into millions.